This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Destroyer, Book 4, by Michael Scott Earle, narrated by Kevin T. Collins and X.C. Sands. Chapter 1. The Obarni. "Just tell me why," Malik's voice echoed in my head. He had been repeating the question for hours. Was it hours or days? Was it days or weeks? It may have been months. I opened my eyes a crack and confirmed that, yes, he did stand outside my cell bars, and his voice wasn't an agony-induced hallucination. A cupful of light dripped through a hole in the doorway behind him, highlighting the pain and anger in his eyes. The absolute agony. "You know why." "No," he replied. "Just execute me and end this." I tried and failed to negotiate Ayalorothi's release. I tried to escape. I was now in special chains crafted with spikes that drove through the flesh of my arms and into the bone beneath the muscle. The chains were attached to a ring of steel, and then looped back to a chain wrapped around my neck like a noose. Any movement threatened to render me unconscious, even shitting on the tiny bucket Malik left me. Then again, I really didn't need to shit or piss. They had stopped bringing me food after I stopped eating. "Did she mean so little to you? Did we mean so little to you?" I closed my eyes. I could not tolerate the ridiculousness of his question. They meant everything to me. But I could never explain it to him. I could never explain Ayalorothi. I closed my eyes and imagined I was back in the inn with her, planning to steal the ovule from Malik. I should have convinced her to leave Shlara's Rest. We could have found another ovule. She was so committed to saving our daughter. Nothing else mattered to her, not her own life, nor mine. I thought back to our written communication in our room. I longed to hear her voice, but I feared we would be overheard, so we remained silent, scratching out our desperate plans on paper passed back and forth. "How did you know we would be in your house?" The timbre of my voice disappointed me. I sounded weak and defeated. I was defeated. I did not know where she was. The moment we set our feet in Malik's courtyard, scores of Thayer and Malik's elite warriors attacked. At first I was thankful we had not been killed. Now I longed for death. I opened my eyes. Malik was gone. The light had changed. I must have passed out from the pain. I closed my eyes again and thought of my daughter. "She is wonderful, beyond anything our people have ever created." I wanted her to tell me more, but she shook her head sadly and wrote, "Every second we waste makes it less likely you will ever meet. She is the best of you and me." She pointed to the rough map of Malik's estate and asked me about the guards I had observed when I scouted the perimeter. I wished I could have known my daughter's name before Ayalorothi and I died. I was foolish to think Malik would ever give up his search. He was too smart and too driven to just let me wander the world unobserved. He had been waiting and watching until we walked right into his trap. "Wake the fuck up!" A booted toe slammed into my chest with enough force to break stone. My ribs weren't quite rock hard, so a few of them broke and instantly knitted together. I'd been so used to the earth running through my body that I couldn't even turn off my healing if I wanted. Hands grabbed me, and the chain around my neck slid through the loop on the wall. I opened my eyes. There were six of them. Thayers. The first time they put me in the cell, they had only sent three. I killed two of them before a dozen warriors came to their aid and sedated me with a sea of pummeling fists. Now I was restrained with the spiked manacles, and the guards carried long metal poles tipped with sharp hooks so they could control me from a safe distance. Where are we going? My words tasted like blood. Shut the fuck up! A pole hit me in the head, then another. I felt the coldness of the stone floor and heard the wet slapping sounds of more pole strikes against my body. I didn't feel them. Get him up, a voice commanded, and the arms grabbed me again. A cloth sack slid over my head, and the beating squad half dragged me out of my cell and into the hallway beyond my prison. I considered resisting again, but the collar and shackles were still embedded in my skin and bones. There was little I could do against this many guards unarmed. The trip was short. They lifted me up and slammed me down into a chair. My nose was filled with dried blood, but I could still detect weapon oil, leather, and chain armor. The guards secured me to the chair with more chains. I could hear the sounds of many more heartbeats. I knew their sense before they removed the hood from my head. Hello, old friends. I mustered a smile and realized that a couple of my back teeth were missing. The new ones pushed through my gums already. Fuck you, Gorbani's voice cracked. His face was red and his blue eyes looked ready to tear. I did not know how much time had passed since the last battle, but they had not changed. They had abandoned their armor in favor of looser garments, still in the colors of their armies. You may leave, Malik said to the guards behind me. I watched them exit the thick iron door 40 feet away. The metal portal clanged shut, and a thick bar slid in to lock it. Do you have anything to say to us? Alexia whispered. Her eyes were blue, like Gorbani's, but a few shades lighter. She had grown out her blonde hair, and now wore it braided down the left side of her neck. They sat behind a massive stone and oak table that looked well-worn. Perhaps I wasn't the first of our kind to face trial in this room. As I told Malik, I made a mistake. I met her stare, and she quickly glanced away. One hell of a mistake, Thayer spat. The chains and metal poles tied me to the steel frame of the chair. It, in turn, was secured to the rock floor with massive studs of iron. I closed my eyes and leaned my head back slightly. It didn't matter. Even if I could escape my bonds, there would be no way I could fight through the four of them, break out of the door, and make it to Iolorothi. Is it too late to beg forgiveness? I opened my eyes and knew the answer before any of them spoke. Why did you run? Malik couldn't hide his frustration. His jaw clenched, and his back sat rigid in his own chair. You know why. I want you to fucking tell me. He slammed his fist into the wood of the table, and it creaked under the sudden load. His eyes shone with tears, and his nostrils flared. I made my choice. I just wanted this to end. My punishment had been too long in coming. You chose some elven woman over her, over us, over your own fucking people. We believed in you. We loved you and thought you loved us. Malik's voice cracked, and it sounded like he wanted to say more, but he stopped. I didn't dare open my eyes. I clenched them tighter and gave another futile wish that this could just be over. How did you deceive us for all that time? Alexia's voice was less than a whisper now. There were no tricks. He knew the elven. What was she to you? Malik questioned. If I told you, it would make even less sense. I sighed and struggled to force my tears back into their ducts. She was the daughter of the chieftain in the tribe we belonged to, Thayer said. She was known to be ruthless and evil, even among her kind. I never interacted with her. I saw her a few times, watching from the hillside while Kyair and I trained. I did not even realize she was at the last battle. I did not figure out who she was until we captured her. But I still do not understand. He grunted, and I heard his chair creak. Perhaps it doesn't matter anymore, but I would still like to know why. For her. Gorbani's voice had calmed, but the anger had not left it. Can we negotiate? I had successfully kept the tears at bay, and I opened my eyes. Fuck no, Thayer seethed. But you owe us answers. No, I felt myself growing angry. I owe the four of you nothing I haven't already given. I owe Shlara answers and an apology. They looked stunned, but I didn't give them a chance to reply. I swore we would destroy the elven race. They are all but wiped out now. Our people are free. I trained you, taught you, guided you, loved you, and led you to the victory I promised. You have created a civilization from their ashes. I am proud of what we accomplished, but I want no part of it. I just want the elven woman, and to be left alone. What kind of madness possesses you? Malik's eyes squinted. These aren't the words of Kyair. They are the words of a man who thinks nothing of his people. I spent most of my life thinking of my people. What more can I do? What more do you want from me? My work is done. You have to pay for your crime, Gorbani said. His eyes were sad. I did not know what they had expected, but my answers had not satisfied them. What do you have in mind? I kept my face neutral and tried to keep sarcasm from my voice. We will talk and decide. This hurts us more than you know. Alexia had always been skilled at keeping her emotions in check, but for a moment her facade slipped, and my heart almost wept at the pain in her eyes. What more is there to discuss? They looked between each other, and some sort of communication passed that I did not understand. Why were you in my home? Malik had not asked me this question during our previous meetings, and I wondered if he understood the power and purpose of the ovule. You would kill me if I told you. I breathed a sigh. Trying to finish the job, eh? Thayer shook his head, disgust clear on his face. I wouldn't be here if I didn't need to be. I gave Thayer a puzzled look. I think we have heard enough, Gorbani seethed. We have all agonized about what happened and when this day would finally come. Let us report on what he said and then be done with him. Footsteps approached from down the hallway, and the four ex-generals suddenly looked nervous. Report? I almost laughed. Who do you report to? Don't tell me that you answer to Ricata Lusti Katri now. Who? Malik leaned forward, but his eyes flickered between my face and the door behind me. The dragon that escaped. I had never debriefed them after the final battle. Is that the creature's name? How do you know? He asked. She spoke to me during the battle. Her words were in my head after I killed her mate and offspring, I admitted. How? Alexia asked. They all looked past my face, and I heard their hearts beat faster. They were scared, almost terrified. What could frighten these four? Malik opened his mouth as if to say something, but then he closed it and sighed. I studied them for a few seconds while the footsteps grew closer and the bar of the metal slid open. The hinges screeched, and my nose was assaulted by the sickly sweet scent of rotting flesh. Whoever walked behind me was the source of the odor, and it overpowered everyone in the room, especially Malik, whose skin was now a light shade of green. An armored hand rested on my right shoulder, and I forced my nose to revert to human senses, or I might have fainted. I could not turn my head to see who stood behind me, but the fingertips of the armor looked like dripping, swirling wax that had been melted into metal. Another hand squeezed my left shoulder, and I felt fear. Fear like I had not felt since the dragons. "Who are you?" I asked, but I already knew the answer. I was an idiot, a fool. How could I have led the greatest army this world had ever known and missed something so critical? My friend's endless pursuit of me now made complete sense. "Hello, Kyair," Shlara whispered. Chapter 2. Kyair. I screamed as I woke. The terror clung to me. Knowing she had lived somehow increased my anguish and regret. The strong, incredible warrior I had known and loved had not simply died. She had been transformed into a revolting, terrible monster, an angry, grotesque version of her former self, feared by her closest friends. She was not at peace. She was in agony, and filled with justifiable rage toward me. It was worse than death. I was so sure she had died by my fire. I had seen the fireball scorch her skin, her armor. It had engulfed the beautiful woman in a sticky torch of horror. I heard her death cries. I heard her heart stop. I was haunted by those sounds. "By the spirits, man, you just scared the piss out of me." The voice was familiar, but I couldn't see anything but the melted fists of her green gauntlets clutching at my shoulder. I lay in a small bed made up of linen sheets covering dried straw. The sheets were wet and stank of my fear. The rest of the room contained a squat dresser, nightstand, and a full bookshelf. Each piece of furniture was crafted of simple oak, stained an off-rose color. "You've been unconscious for 6 days, but you were that way when I found you, so spirits know what happened to you." The voice drew my attention back to the doorway of the small, musty room. The man wore a sun-bleached yellow tunic and a pair of cloudy purple breeches. Both were stained with black swirls of ink and hung about him as if they were pinned onto a scarecrow. He had a kind face with sparkling blue eyes and long wisps of gray hair on his chin and head. "Hello, Jancy," I said to Pog's grandfather. The sight of the older man put me at ease, and I felt my heart slow from a gallop to a canter. "Good morning, Kyair. I am glad to see you alive, although I imagine I will not enjoy the news you bring from the capital." His face formed a half-smile through the white beard. "You don't know? I've heard rumors. Some minstrels and travelers have brought words, but their news is always old, and the stories are conflicting." "Where am I?" I looked down at the bed. I wore a pair of undergarments that I didn't recognize, but the rest of my body was bare under the sheet. "You are in my home," he nodded, as if I should have already known the answer. "I don't remember getting here. You said I have been unconscious for almost a week. I smelled salt on the air, and now that I was calmer, I heard the sound of the ocean outside of the home." "Aye, are you hungry? Might be better to speak over some fish and eggs." "Yes, please." I didn't feel particularly famished, but I guessed that once I started eating, my appetite would return. "I'll grab you a pair of pants and a tunic." He returned with more ink-stained clothes that may have once been white, but were now a shade of bluish-gray, probably from washing with said ink stains on the fabric. Jancy left to prepare the meal, and I examined my body before donning the garments. Besides the scars I already knew of, I didn't appear to have any injuries. My legs still seemed to have strength in them. I walked out of the room and into the main living area. It looked as I would have guessed. A small but accessible kitchen sat behind a long stone counter. A large white-bricked oven took up one entire wall and warmed the room and the food Jancy was preparing. In another corner, a long, rickety table was surrounded with mismatched chairs, facing a huge sheet of black slate, still bearing some faint remnants of information scrawled with chalk. Pog had told me that he and his grandfather helped instruct the local children. Then there were the books. Save for the black slate area next to the table, the rest of the walls were covered with shelves laden with books of all sizes, shapes, colors, and ages. To me, the arrangement looked haphazard, but I knew a man like Jancy would have some method of organization, however illogical. "I found you on the beach, a few miles north of the lighthouse." He had four gutted fish splayed open on a wood cutting board. They were coated with salt, dill, and slices of lemon. He threw a generous glob of golden butter into a hot pan, and it popped and sizzled as it quickly melted into oily translucence. He began to crack some brown eggs into a bowl as he continued. "You were lying naked on the shore like a piece of flotsam. Pog told me you disappeared, and everyone thought you were dead, so I was rather surprised to find you. How did you get me back here?" I sat at the counter across from him and put my elbows on the table. I dreaded telling him about Pog. The cowardly part of me wanted to prolong it by staying away from the subject of Naya. But I knew the longer I waited, the more difficult the conversation would become. I suspected Jancy was avoiding the obvious question for the same reason. As long as it remained unspoken, he could protect that small warm hope he had for his grandson. I lashed half a dozen pieces of driftwood together, rolled you onto it, and then dragged you. I'm not a young man, but you don't weigh much. I walk for a few hours every morning before the rest of the village wakes. Pog made me pick up the habit. I suspected it was so he could make himself extra breakfast, but I ended up enjoying the activity. One shouldn't spend too much time alone with his books. Tea? I nodded, and he pinched leaves into a mug. Then he poured water from a steaming kettle into it before placing it down on the counter. "Isn't your home fairly far from the capital?" "Aye, about 2 weeks' journey by horse." He set to whisking the eggs. "How did I make it to the beach? I tried to remember riding here from the castle, but recalled nothing. The process frustrated me, so I took a sip of tea. It was bright and grassy, with a refreshing acidic tang that helped wake me up. Naya was attacked one night. The princess was kidnapped, and then the soldiers said you were killed. He said the words over his back as he poured the whipped eggs into the pan. Obviously, the account of your death was greatly exaggerated. He turned his head and winked at me. "Yes, I chased after one of the elvens, the people you called the ancients. I recall you mentioning that you thought of them as elvens." Jancy nodded and began to slice up the fish. "It was an ambush. I fought many through the city streets. I managed to defeat them, but I saw several kidnap Jesme. I chased after them and freed her before they made it too far north. Then a storm came, and we holed up in a cave. Eventually, we found our way to a farming village and heard word that Naya had been attacked and taken by the elvens. Rumors were that Jesme's family was dead." Pog's grandfather nodded and squeezed the lemon slices onto the fish before putting them in the pan with the eggs. "I left Jesme in the village, and then I traveled back to the castle to see what had transpired. I found my memory returning as the story unfolded. The capital had been invaded, and the elvens controlled it. In the city I met Graykin, and he suspected that what was left of the royal family was imprisoned in the castle. I joined him, and we used the catacombs and sewers under the city to reach the underside of the dungeons." "The catacombs? There are tales of that place. Apparently it is incredibly vast and inhabited by horrible creatures. Some of my books say that there was once a city there, and that Castle Naya was built on top of it. Jancy had forgotten about the eggs during my story, and he quickly turned back to flip them. There were creatures there. Graykin called them worms. Worms, the old man gasped. What did they look like? Ugly, smelly snakes, bigger than 3 horses in a line. They had beaks like birds that opened with 3 hinges. Many of Graykin's men died. That is unfortunate. After breakfast, I will have to write the account in more specifics, and perhaps make a few drawings with your help. There are no scientific records of worms, only fables and myths. He produced a plate and put the large fish omelet in front of me. I already ate breakfast. As I recall, you can eat plenty. Yes, I took the first scalding bite and allowed it to cool in my mouth before I swallowed. This is delicious. Thank you. You are more than welcome. Please continue with your account. He began to scrub the counter and knives with a bar of soap and bristle brush. The question of Pog still lingered, unasked and unanswered, but I saw it in Jancy's eyes each time I paused in my story. I wondered if he already knew, somehow. Jesme would have believed this, that Pog's spirit could somehow communicate with the old man. I had always been dismissive of religion, but as more of my past unfolded, I was starting to believe that nearly anything was possible. I was separated from the rest of the men and made it to the castle. I found Graykin and the Duke working in the servants' quarters. Beltor believed that Nadia lived and seemed convinced that Nanos knew where she was. The prince was under constant guard, but had been allowed freedom to move through the castle. We tried to communicate with him, but he was discovered. "What of Pog?" he finally asked. I could see the anguish plain in his eyes now. He had waited patiently as I recounted all the other details of the siege and rescue. I had done this many times. We had lost countless men and women during our struggle for freedom, and while our kind never married, a dead soldier's parents and offspring were always notified. Eventually, my generals took over this task within their own armies. He fell, protecting Nadia. I hoped that the truth of his grandson's final, heroic act would bring the old man some solace in the face of such horror. He could truly be proud of his grandson. It was easy for someone like me to seem courageous. I was strong. I was trained. I had spent decades fighting and killing. I had powers beyond any opponent this world or any other had been able to conjure to test me. Yet even I knew the chill grip of fear and the self-preserving instinct to run when faced with impossible odds. And I remembered how terrifying it was to be human and weak. Pog had displayed true bravery. He had no combat experience, no fitness, no idea what to do, what to expect, or even how to wield a weapon. He had no reason to think he would be victorious, but he still did what was right. He still acted to defend his friend, and he should always be remembered as a great hero. I wanted to convey this to Jancy, but the pain in his eyes and the pain in my heart when I thought of my young friend caught in my throat and I was rendered mute for a moment while I collected myself. "Oh," Jancy nodded and looked away to the dishes. During the attack, the king, Nanos, Graykin, Nadia, and Pog fled to the safe room. The king and Nanos were separated from the rest. Graykin stayed behind to fend off some loachers. When Nadia and Pog made it to the room, the king was dead by Nanos's hand. What? Jancy's tears painted his face. Nanos was working with the Empress of the Elvens. He killed his father before they reached the room. Pog took up the king's sword to defend Nadia, and Nanos murdered him. Jancy nodded and blinked away tears. He looked to his dishes, but they were already clean and neatly stacked. I walked past the counter and wrapped my arms around the old man before the first sobs could rock his frame. At first, he resisted my embrace, but I didn't let go, and he relented, pushing his face into my shoulder and unleashing his tears as any grieving parent would. I cried as well, and we stood in the kitchen until the sun came through the small windows of the wall and the gulls outside indicated that it was midday. "We were heading home," he said much later, after I had helped him make lunch, and we had taken it down to the rocks of the beach to watch the waves roll in. It was the first time he had spoken since I told him of Pog. It was apparent to all that Naya would fall, and Nadia had released him from service. I could tell he wanted to be back there. He wanted to help his friends. He sighed heavily and looked down again at his food. It was more fish with peppers and cucumber from a garden on the south side of his small cottage. It was dangerous. I wanted to force him to come home. I wanted to yell at him. He was all I had left in this world. "My poor boy." I nodded, but said nothing. A boy has to grow up sometime, though. Even if he had known he would die, he would have still gone back. He wanted to be a hero. Like you. The old man's words slammed into my heart like a punch from Thayer, though he didn't say it with any sort of malice. "I am no hero," I said, and I stood and stretched. I turned back to the old man, and his face was open in expectation of more. "I have done unspeakable things. I am the same man Nadia and Pog read about and hoped for, but the things I have done are not heroic. I doubt that, Kyair. I do wish to hear of it, though. Will you tell me?" I nodded, and then I did. I told him of my father and brother, of the mother I never knew. I told him of Io Larothi and how we were lovers. I told him how she killed them. I told him of the training under the Elvens, and escaping with Thayer, along with the rest of our enslaved and newly powered kin. I told him of the endless years running from the Elvens, and finally meeting Entis, how he helped train us and form our army. I spoke of Stoic Alexia, and how Thayer and I found her being raped by Elven men. Then we talked of proud and honest Gorbani, and of passionate Malik, and Shlara. I spoke to him of all the battles I remembered, how we failed and triumphed and built the army. I said that I loved both Shlara and Io Larothi, and knew it to be true, yet the Elven woman never left my thoughts or dreams, so I could never commit to Shlara. I related the final battle, and all its fantastic detail. I explained how I killed the dragons. Jancy was fascinated, and again mentioned how he must record the information on the dragons and worms for the knowledge of future generations. I told him how I fell from the dragon's talon, found Io Larothi, and made love to her again. How Shlara found us, and how I ended up killing the woman I should have loved to save the one I did, how I fled like a coward and spent many years in pursuit of the Elven, being pursued by my kin. I told him of the Radical, the Ovules, and that we had a child. I spoke of rescuing Io Larothi from Shlara's rest, and then our capture after we tried to steal the Ovule. Then I recounted my last memory and my horror that Shlara was still alive. By the time I concluded my long, personal history, we had returned to his home and the night bled into morning as we finished a dusty bottle of brandy and a salted haunch of pork, both of which, Jancy told me, he had been saving for a special occasion. Do you believe that your generals thought you were coming back to kill Shlara? Jansi asked. That is a possibility. Thayer's question about finishing the job made little sense at the time, but it could be that was what they thought. If she was staying in Malik's home, and they didn't know I was looking for the ovule, I can see why they made that assumption. I churned the idea over in my head a bit more and found it likely. I didn't want to tell them of Iola Rothi or my daughter. I didn't want to give them anything to use over me. I am guessing that strategy ultimately failed, though. We haven't spoken about the circumstances that led you to the shores of our village. Jansi rubbed his eyes, and I guessed the old man was using all of his might to stay awake. We can talk more about it after some rest. I began to stand. No, please. He grabbed my hands and gently pulled me back to the table. I may look physically tired, but my brain has never been more excited and full of energy. I won't be able to sleep even if I lie down. We smiled at each other, and I sat again. I think I left off with Nanos. He agreed to meet us in the castle's dungeon. He said he would tell us of Nadia. I was suspicious of him even then. I never liked the little bastard. I paused as Jansi smirked and nodded in agreement, but I just thought he was a prick, not a traitor. I never would have imagined one of our own kind being allied with elvens. It was a trap. The Duke, Graykin, and I were captured. Shit. The elven general in charge of the conquest of Naya was named Alatoricht. He asked me questions I did not understand about my clan. He said that they had Nadia in the castle, and if I agreed to stay and meet with his empress in a few weeks, he wouldn't kill her. I negotiated with him further, and he threw in the release of Beltor, Graykin, and the queen. I was a prisoner in my room, but there were interesting conversations to be had. Interesting? Jansi asked. Alatoricht spoke of treaties, and asked why and how I had come to this world. I did not understand what he meant, but I tried to act as if I did to get more information from him. My memories were still sparse. He told me that the man named Kyair was known as the Destroyer and had died 5,000 years ago. One of Alatoricht's commanders was responsible for guarding me. I was able to get more information from her in exchange for sex and an agreement that I would insist she be present when I met with their empress. I later learned that they never had Nadia in custody. She had escaped a week prior. Jansi managed a sigh and chuckle. I imagined you would have dealt with the situation differently had you known. Perhaps. I did wish to meet their empress, preferably armed with a weapon. I did not understand why they did not simply kill me, but they needed me for information, and they are bound by the terms of their treaties with the Obarni to avoid killing our kind. They did not believe I was the real Kyair. They feared I was sent by a group intent on preventing their colonization of this planet. They planned to destroy the Radicals and prevent the migration of any more Obarni. And though they claim otherwise, I believe their ultimate goal is to enslave the humans here as they had in the past. Horrible. How did you escape? I dreamed of the final battle, of killing the dragons, of Iola Rothi and Shlara. I awoke to find my room and an entire wing of the castle destroyed. I could hear Nadia, or sense her somehow. I knew she was in the castle, and I knew she was injured. I found her, with Nanos, in the safe room. Nadia was bleeding out on the floor beside her cousin. I knew he had betrayed us, but I did not yet know he had killed his father, or Pog, nor stabbed Nadia. I left him, and took Nadia with me out of the castle. She was going to die, so I used my magic to turn her into an Obarni. Did it work? Pog's grandfather gasped. Yes. I wanted to explain more, that Nadia was not human, that she was the Empress's daughter. But it was not my secret, and it did not seem right for Jancy to know before Nadia. But she was in a coma for many weeks. I found Runeer in the castle, and he took me to their army. They had been hiding in Fisherman's Gorge and raiding the Loscher forces. When she awoke, we put our stories together, and I realized the depth of Nanos's betrayal. We argued briefly about what to do next. I wanted to travel north to find Jesme, Beltor, Graykin, and the Queen. Nadia asked me to stay with her army. I had won the argument, but before I could leave, Alatoric's commander raided our camp with a significant force of elven warriors. "The woman who was your lover?" Jancy asked. "Yes. She demanded that I return to the castle, or she would kill everyone in our army. I complied and returned with her. On the way back, I experienced more memories, and apparently I fainted. When I awoke, I was in a tent outside the city walls. As I spoke, I felt more memories of Islata and Virnine returning. I finally met with the Empress and her generals. She possessed a type of magic I had never experienced, some scent she used to control and manipulate the way others felt about her. I was instantly attracted to her and wanted to please and obey. I suspect this magic helped her rise to power and accomplish all she has. She is extremely persuasive. However, I was able to tone down my sense of smell and regain control. The conversation was similar to those I'd had with Alatoric. She wanted my help locating the radical where Nadia found me. She threatened to assassinate Nadia if I did not cooperate. What did you do? I delayed as long as I dared. I wondered if the Empress would keep her word, but I had little choice. If I did not tell her, I knew she would kill me. If I did tell her, there was a chance she would have me taken there. It would have given me a chance to escape. The statement was a lie. I knew that Nadia was Telaxthi's daughter, and I had intended to use that information as leverage. Before I could make my decision, a group of my kin arrived. Jancy's eyes grew wide. "Do you recall Ieren?" "Yes, the lanky fellow that escorted my grandson and the Duchess. He was an Obarni. At some point in the past, a number of them split off from Thayer's clan. I am unsure of the politics involved, but this new clan has members that scout unoccupied worlds for resources. There is some sort of reward amongst the clans for anyone that brings in a pretender, someone who uses my name. Apparently a few have impersonated me over the years. The Elven and Obarni believed I was another impostor." "Did you suspect Ieren was one of your people?" Jancy asked. "No, not really. I thought back to all the time I spent with the woodsman, but I always felt comfortable around him. We did have a kind of connection. When I found out, I was not surprised." The group of Obarni was led by the patriarch of this newly formed clan. His name was Kaneth, and the Empress owed him some favors. He told me that he had captured Jesme and Beltor. He said he wanted me to return with him through the Radical to stand trial. "Trial? For doing what? Trying to save us from these elvens?" Jancy's voice sounded gruff from staying up all night. "For being named Kyair. It is a crime now amongst my people to have that name. I actually tried to convince him that I was, in fact, Kyair, but he didn't believe me. The irony. If they want anyone even named after you to die, they would probably be extremely interested in capturing the real you," Jancy smirked. "I have a suspicion that someone, either the clan leaders or someone close to the top of their leadership, knows that I am not dead. Why else would they want to find anyone named Kyair? From what Kanneth told me during our travels, the reward for returning a pretender is great, enough for him to leave his duties, leading his clan, and personally retrieve me. So you went with him? Yes, the Empress was in a bind. She didn't have the information she needed from me, and so could not let me return with Kanneth. The Elvens have tried to get a world of their own for many years. Each of her predecessors thought they had secured one through trade or treaty with the Obarni. Eventually, my people would go back on their word and end up occupying the world and either forcing the Elvens to leave or making life difficult for them. The Empress believed that if I left alive, I would tell the clan leaders how she sacked Naya and was responsible for many human deaths. I think the clans believed this world to be uninhabited by humans, or at least a civilized population. If the clans knew that there were humans here, do you think they would come to our aid? Jancy asked. Maybe, I shrugged. That is what she fears, and why she was so desperate to destroy the radicals. I understood her dilemma enough to make a deal with her. I left out the part where she attempted to have Yillamar kill me in combat. If she killed these Obarni, I would tell her where my radical was located. I lied again. I had agreed to tell her about her daughter, but Jancy didn't need to know about that now. Kanneth and his warriors escorted me northward, through Naya, while the Empress's scouts tracked us. When I got to the campsite, I found Jesme and Beltor in good health. Ieren was with them. Then the Empress's assassins did their work. I didn't want Ieren to die, but they killed him, which is unfortunate because he was my friend, but also because he knew of the radical that Kanneth used to get here. I'm somewhat surprised that you had Elvens kill off Kanneth and his warriors, Jancy said with concern. My goal is to remove the Elvens from this world. If Kanneth brought me back to his leaders, he believed I would be immediately tried and executed. Jesme and Beltor appealed to him for help, and he made it clear that apprehending me was his priority, and there was nothing valuable enough on this planet to encourage his people to come to your aid. Even if they could be convinced, it would take some time. In the meantime, the Empress could have discovered the radicals and destroyed them. Then your land would be hers without question. I've lived in a world where Elvens rule, my friend. It is not a good place. I understand. So you returned with the Elvens to the Empress? This is where my memories grow less clear. I closed my eyes and tried to recall the last few days. I woke up in the campsite. The Elvens were gone. Beltor and Jesme were gone. They must have knocked me unconscious or left me for dead. The Empress's sister was in charge of this mission, and she did not care for me. Didn't the Empress want to know where your radical is? Jancy asked. Her sister wasn't privy to our deal. I made my way back to Naya and found that Nadia had surrendered her army. They were camped outside of the walls. I met with General Merrick, and he said that they were turned away at Brilla. There was nowhere else for the army to go, and Nadia had been offered attractive terms for surrender. Do you know the terms? The Empress would allow Nadia and Beltor to maintain seats on the council and manage the eastern part of the country. Do you believe her? Perhaps she will keep her word for a few years, maybe even for as long as Nadia lives. Eventually, though, the Elvens will want slaves. They want to be masters of their world. No peace can last. Jancy nodded at my words, and I continued. I entered the castle through the sewers again with Knight Captain Danor. Do you know him? I've heard the name before. He is a great hero in the Naya army. About half a dozen years ago, the country was plagued by an organized group of bandits. He led the force that wiped them out. Ah, I didn't know of his past deeds. I knew he was trustworthy and a courageous warrior. I took a sip of water from a pitcher Jancy set on the table earlier and tried to remember more. I'm sorry, my friend. I know we entered the castle. I remember talking to Nadia. I remember that she didn't want to leave, but I convinced her. I recall the reunion she had with her father. My voice trailed off into a whisper. Why couldn't I remember? Did you escape from the castle? I was looking for Jesme. I think I found her. There was a pounding in my head, like my brain was knocking hard on the inside of my skull. It has been a long day, night, and morning, Kaer. Perhaps a few hours of rest will clear up your mind. If your last memory is of the castle Naya, there has to be more story worth telling. You are right. I rubbed my eyes a bit and cleared fog from them. Sleep did sound wonderful. I'll probably remember more after some rest. Do you want breakfast before you go? Sun will be up in a couple of hours. No, that is fine. I am hungry, but I can eat when I wake up. I'll see you later in the day. Thank you for listening. Thank you for telling me of your life, Kaer. I wish that Pog... The old man stopped himself and sighed. Well, no use wishing for things that can't be. My grandson would have liked to hear what you told me today. Get to bed, he ordered, and pointed to the room that once belonged to my young friend. The sheets felt cool, and I almost didn't have the energy to take off my clothes before passing out. I tried to remember more of the castle before the dreams took me, but it was no use. As if on a river, my mind slipped from the story I had just told Jancy to a dream of fighting hordes of my enemies. In the dream, my screaming death armor felt like it was part of my body.
Chapter 3. Isle Arathi.
Our tribal lands lay over the next hill.
The male escort had told me his name a few times, but I had not bothered to remember it. I made no response to his statement, and he cleared his throat before the sour scent of fear escaped his body. Even in the cool breeze rolling over these grassy hills, I could smell him. "Do you wish to rest here for lunch, or should we carry on?" Gerleta was the other escort from my father's tribe of Laxiel. She also wore the sour scent of fear, but it was less offensive than the stench of her male counterpart. "How long until we reach the estate?" Corlintha asked for me. 6 more hours, which is why I asked if Isle Arathi would prefer to rest. Gerleta smelled of sharp cabbage now, bitter and pungent. "We will break here." I turned to Corlintha and nodded. She blinked her purple eyes and bowed slightly before turning her horse around to face the rest of the caravan. With a click of her tongue, the beast cantered down the small slope toward the many covered wagons. She would alert them to my plans and oversee my lunch preparation. "May we eat with you?" Gerleta asked. Her heart beat quicker and the sour stench grew hotter in the midday heat. I was surprised at her boldness and considered the consequences of acceptance. My father had sent his top traders to escort me and my servants from my mother's lands. Despite traveling together for the last month, I had done nothing to build a relationship with them. My mother would be displeased, but her opinion hardly mattered anymore. "Yes, but sit downwind of me. For the love of the dead gods, you both reek like you expect me to kill you any second." The woman's emerald eyes opened along with her mouth. "We are sorry, mistress. We don't wish to offend you," the male said. "Silence. I don't want to hear your bullshit now. You may join me for lunch, but do not speak unless I address you." They both bowed deeply off the side of their horses, and the sour scent increased. I dismounted my own steed and handed the stallion's reins to Gerleta. He was a spirited warhorse that disliked anyone's presence but mine. He must have sensed my displeasure because he didn't balk at the woman's touch when she tied him to the nearby juniper. 20 humans set up my pavilion downwind so that I would not experience their stench. They would just handle the framework and the canvas top of the structure. Then my personal servants would place the furniture, rugs, tables, and deliver my meal. Corlinta approached me from the direction of the caravans and offered me one of her rare smiles. "You, Gerleta, and the male escort, Shirtlin," she reminded me, "will join me for lunch, unless you have other plans." I raised an eyebrow. "I need to see to one of the wagons. The wheels have cracked, and it might not make it the rest of the way." She couldn't hide her smirk, and the scent of apricots drifted to my nose. "Don't leave me alone with them." I tried my best not to sound frustrated, since I knew she was joking with me. "It would be unthinkable for me to deny the single-born." She chuckled a bit. "Soon you will be on your own, though. Don't remind me." "Oh, they approach. Their fear is rotten like month-old fruit. Maybe if you were nice to them, they would smell better," Corlinta suggested. "Not my nature." "You are nice to me." Corlinta shook her head with a sigh. "You are mistaken. You just fuck up less than my other attendants." I crossed my arms and smirked at the purple-eyed woman. Her hair was the color of weathered silver wood, and she kept it cut short. "You are a liar, and will miss me when I return home." She smiled and full now, and I enjoyed the apricot scent of her humor. "See, that is where you are the one mistaken." I laughed a little and winked at her. "You are staying here with me until my brother and sister come to visit." The escorts approached and stood north of me. Corlinta held off her response with a bite to her lip and then turned to them. "Your servants have prepared the pavilion," the male whose name I had forgotten again said. I nodded at him and walked toward the tent. Inside were a scattering of leather chairs, plush carpets, and dark wood tables laden with food. Lavender and pine incense burned to smoke from various places under the tent, and my nose could finally ignore the fear that permeated my escorts. I sat in the prominent chair and raised one of the empty crystal glasses for my servants to fill. It looked as if they had decided on mead for this afternoon's treat, and the honey spice aroma, along with the incense, almost made it feel like home. I swirled the golden liquid in the glass for a bit to mellow the taste, and then took a small taste. "Thank you for sharing this meal with us," Gerleta said while she placed a few thin cuts of boar meat and cheese from a nearby table on her plate. I nodded at her and took another sip of the mead. The warmth ran through me, and I held back a shudder of pleasure. The breeze picked up and carried the scent of grass, juniper, and water to my nose. I inhaled deeply, and the first positive thought about my relocation came to mind. At least my father's lands were beautiful. I could appreciate the desert, with its howling salt winds, jasmine forests, and fresh springs, but the hay meadows and forests of the western lands were filled with much more interesting scents and sights. I was actually looking somewhat forward to riding through the endless pastures and exploring the various glens scattered through them. Of course, I would never admit such desires. "When was the last time you spoke to your father?" the male asked after Corlinta set a plate of food in my hands. "A decade or so ago. He came to visit me on my 20th. The mustard was made with ground chunks of seeds and agreed marvelously with the cuts of dried and salted roast beef. I guessed that the cooks were using the last of our best food, since our final destination was near. I nibbled on a ripe green fig after the bite of meat and mustard, and then washed it all down with more of the mead. "He must be thrilled to see you," Gerleta said. She favored the orange melon over the cuts of meat. It was a typical habit of those less attuned to the elements, but I fought back my sneer. "I care not for his feelings." Their sense intensified with an overcooked vegetable stench. Fucking shit, they were so sensitive. "I am just a pawn in their political games. He hopes to breed me with another tribe's champion in exchange for whatever frivolous bauble he thinks will help him gain power. My mother has been trying to do the same for the last 20 years. I am tired of it." "Don't you have to obey your chieftain's wishes?" the male asked. His curiosity made me think of pumpkins, rotten pumpkins. I am the single born. I laughed at them and finished the remainder of my mead with a quick swallow. I held up my glass and the servant filled it immediately. As soon as either one of them presents me with a suitor that is worthy, I might become aroused. Until then, I looked across the ocean of waving green grass. I never paid much attention to the physical characteristics of my surroundings, since there were so many scents to occupy me, but this place was beautiful. I will attempt to amuse myself here for the next 20 years. What is there to do for fun in your backwater tribe? "We are hardly backwater," the male said. Perhaps he was insulted.